buttons and pushing QAnon. Marjorie Taylor Greene done lost his screen.
What a freaking
thinks this Second Amendment comes first.
Q is a patriot.
While encouraging
murder. And we're gonna kick that out of Congress.
She won't rest till their elections are reversed.
She's only a Trumper, so they're scared to dump her.
Help to incite a coup. She makes Buckman look like Maya Angelou. Simply won't condemn crimes, don't seem to bother them. What the f***?
It's crazy.
Marjorie Taylor.
Q is a patriot.
And you is an idiot.
Yesterday, Green's views inspired a strong reaction from Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. McConnell released a statement saying that the baseless conspiracy theories Green supports are cancer for the Republican Party and our country. Yes, it's cancer, but I will point out that 5 years ago, the GOP found a suspicious lump and then nominated the tumor for president. McConnell kept tearing into Green, calling her beliefs loony lies. You also might remember Loony Lies as the short-lived classic cartoon starring Porky Pig.
Bleep, 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 FDR eats babies, folks.
There is so much division in the Republican Party. They really need a man of true integrity to unite them. Unfortunately, all they've got is House Minority Leader and Mayor assuring the town the beach is mostly shark-free, Kevin McCarthy. McCarthy has resisted calls from Democrats to kick Green off her House committees. Instead, he's promised to have a conversation with her about the mounting controversies sometime this week. Well, that should be productive, as McCarthy proved with his recent trip to Mar-a-Lago, he knows how to put his foot down and his knee down, then his other knee down, so he can smooch some crazy butt.
We have what I'm told is the first video, exclusive video, out of this meeting today between McCarthy and Trump. We'll watch it and react on the other side.
I love you. You complete me. And I just had...
Shut up. Just shut up. You had me at hello. You had me at hello.
That is, obviously, we have rolled the wrong clip, and we were sold a bill of goods here. I thought this was going to be of the McCarthy and Trump meeting, and someone's going to be, of course, in big trouble.
McConnell's not the only one upset with the conspiracy wing of the GOP. Yesterday, we found out that roughly 60 to 70 former Bush officials have decided to leave the party. And as one put it, the Republican Party as I knew it no longer exists. Yes, it's unrecognizable. We just had a Republican president who told over 30,000 lies about serious subjects like election fraud and a global pandemic. The previous Republican president only told lies about small stuff like weapons of mass destruction and government-sanctioned torture. Though I admit, both men were obsessed with yellow cake. I'm surprised these people are surprised. Now, we've all been doing this job for a while now, and we've seen a lot of evidence that this kind of behavior from Republicans was coming. Take former Bush advisor and parboiled American Karl Rove. Back when Rove was in the White House, he sarcastically referred to his critics as the reality-based community and claimed that people like him create our own reality, a reality in which, I will point out, he chose to be Karl Rove. Now, when Rove said that, we all saw where this was headed. Because if that Republican administration could get away with creating their own little space-time continuum with the magic of make-believe, it just goes to figure that it was only a matter of time before everybody else did it. It's just like the hedge fund bros getting mad at people on Reddit. They're not upset that someone's making up some artificially inflated value to game the market. They're just offended that people who aren't in their country club are allowed to play now. So when it comes to crazy conspiracy theories, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. And not just because those same Republicans 13 years ago were fine with rumors that the genie was a secret Muslim. Remember secret Muslim? That was 2007, along with Obama was born in Kenya and the terrorist fist bump, now known as the only way we're allowed to touch each other. So if crazy conspiracy theories are, in fact, a cancer on the Republican Party, people like Mitch McConnell and Karl Rove have spent the last 20 years selling cigarettes to their base. Every day, we learn more details about the Capitol rioters. And every once in a while, these details are just so plain dumb. According to records obtained by CNN so far, at least 8 of the people facing criminal charges for their involvement in the events at the Capitol did not vote. Well, got to admit, sedition is a lot easier than voting. You don't have to register, you don't have to wait in line, you're not risking jury duty, and you still get a cute little sticker.
And now, it's time for What Still Works.
Hello. Hello and welcome to What Still Works, where we look at every part of American society and wonder what still works. Our first topic is government, and already I have my doubts. Joining us is a congresswoman from Georgia who's been promoting QAnon conspiracy theories. Please welcome Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Gun?
Oh, no, no. No, thank you. I'm good.
Okay.
Congresswoman Greene, hard to say those words together. What are some of the theories you believe in and have been promoting?
How much time you got?
For you, very little.
Well, first off, I believe the Parkland shooting was a hoax. The teachers were actors and the children were dolls. I believe 9/11 was a hoax. Did anyone actually see it happen? I've also told my supporters that they should physically murder Nancy Pelosi. She's this lady I work with.
Yeah, I'm familiar. Thank you.
Oh, and this is a new one that just came out. I think that the California wildfires were caused by Jewish space lasers.
So there are lasers in space that cause wildfires, and the lasers identify as Jewish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct.
And those are real things you believe and tell other people about?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you're a U.S. representative?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You represent the U.S.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
People can Google you and it'll say she's a real member of the U.S. government.
Well, that might not be the first thing that comes up, but yeah.
And when your colleagues found out about all these hateful and psychotic things you said, what did they do?
I was promoted to the Education Committee.
Okay, thanks for coming. So government doesn't work.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
And, like that a lot. And
Yeah.
stops. I mean, you just keep turning your dial, but it just never stops. I mean, you just keep turning your dial, but it just never stops. I mean, you just keep turning your dial, but it just never stops. You just keep turning your dial, but it just never stops. I mean, you just keep turning your dial, but it just never stops. I mean, you just keep turning your dial, but it just never stops. I mean, you just keep turning your dial, but it just never stops. I mean, you just keep turning your dial, but it just never stops. I mean, you just keep turning your dial, but it just never stops. I mean, you just keep turning your dial, and it just never stops. I mean, you just keep turning your dial, and it just never stops. I mean, you just keep turning your dial, and it just never stops.
Now to absorb some local color through the magic of AM radio.
The book of Revelations tells us to watch for the seven signs of evil.
Wait, sign of evil number 4.
Continuing our sign of evil countdown, here's Vanessa Williams.
Next, we hear excerpts from two WGXC shows, the Counterspin Show and the Radio Survivor Show, both talking about the Prometheus versus the FCC Supreme Court case. The Federal Communications Commission went before the Supreme Court against the Prometheus Radio Project from Philadelphia, January 19th. First, let's hear from the Counterspin Show about that case, as they talked to Hannah Sassaman about that case.
A big part of modern media criticism involves illustrating the impact of corporate ownership and sponsorship on the media we see, including the effect of concentration of ownership. More and more radio and TV stations in fewer hands, in devastating local media and narrowing the range of voices and perspectives media reflect overall. If the influence of media's mega corporate control is evident in Branch and Leaf, the hidden soil, as it were, is the policy that determines who gets to own outlets. A conversation about representation or diversity can only go so far without hitting that bedrock. That recognition is part of what's behind Prometheus Radio Project versus FCC, in which the federal agency tasked with protecting the public interest once again asks the court for support in jettisoning it. Here to no doubt put a finer point on it is Hannah Sassaman, a former organizer with Prometheus Radio Project. She's now policy director at Movement Alliance Project, also a party to this Supreme Court case. She joins us by phone from Philadelphia. Welcome back to Counterspin, Hannah Sassaman.
Thank you so much.
Well, listeners know that media owners have been fighting for decades to get rid of the rules that restricted their ability to grow to a certain share of the market or to own multiple outlets in one city. And they've had some success, unfortunately, with a pretty captured FCC. What is the FCC trying to do here? And have they come up with some new argument this time around, or is it the same kind of trust in the market and all will be well?
Sure, that's a great question. So if you go all the way back to 1996, under the then Bill Clinton Federal Communications Commission in Congress, there was a law that was passed called the Telecom Act of 1996. And that went in and said, all right, in markets, in media markets all over the country, whether you live in Rochester, New York, or Tulsa, Oklahoma, or San Antonio, Texas, we're going to make it so just a handful of companies, like maybe one newspaper, for example, could own both that local daily paper as well as a handful of radio stations, a television station. And that's the process, as you just described, of media consolidation, meaning that we have fewer and fewer owners owning outlets. Now, the commission under that Telecom Act of 96 is required to analyze whether or not relaxing media ownership impacts the number of women's voices, women's owned stations, and the number of minority-owned stations, so black and brown stations around the country or outlets around the country. Now, what the FCC has not done is actually its homework. So every 4 years, they go around and they say that they've looked around and examined ownership, and they say, it's fine, don't worry about it, letting companies own more stations, own more outlets in these markets won't impact that racial and gender diversity. But then groups like mine, groups like Prometheus Radio, and other organizations around the country, like represented by truly dogged public interest lawyers, said, hold up, you haven't done your work. You haven't actually proven that it hasn't hurt these markets. And it's just absolutely evident if you go around the country that we've seen the impacts of consolidation as it's already progressed on squashing diverse voices and really lifting up primarily conservative ones. If you take a look, for example, at Sinclair Broadcasting, which is one of the largest owners of broadcast television outlets in the United States, those were companies that literally were promoting during this pandemic conspiracy theories. They were taking rhetoric coming out of the Trump administration and creating editorial content and distributing it and parroting it around the country. So that was absolutely a really major cause in an America where 90% of our community listens to broadcast media at least every week. It's not just all online. It was a major cause of the polarization that's led to some of the biggest upsets in American democracy that we've ever seen. So the Prometheus versus the FCC case was decided multiple times in what's called the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, where Prometheus is headquartered, where my organization, Movement Alliance Project, is headquartered. And the court said, yes, we don't think the FCC has done its homework, and it's gone back and told the FCC to actually show this time whether or not it impacted the diversity it is required to protect. And so the government appealed that decision to the Supreme Court. We had our arguments just, you know, a couple weeks ago, and we'll wait to see what the Supreme Court decides. That's where we're at.
Sassaman was referring to the Sinclair television stations. They include the CBS and the CW stations in Albany that often play the propaganda Sassaman was discussing there. Next, we hear Minnesota University professor Christopher Terry and his take with the Radio Survivor Show on the case before the Supreme Court.
We welcome back to the program a dear friend of the program, Professor Christopher Terry from the University of Minnesota.
Always great to be here.
The Federal Communications Commission was in front of the Supreme Court on the 19th of January as part of this long-standing case, FCC v. Prometheus Radio Project. Prometheus stands in for a group of public interest organizations who have sued the FCC regarding its regulation of ownership in the media. And a particular issue in this case is how is the effect of ownership regulations on the ownership of media, radio and television in particular, by women and minorities. The case has been sitting in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, which is actually out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, for well over a decade, going on two decades now. And the FCC appealed this to the Supreme Court. And you know, in short, effectively, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals keeps telling the FCC, you know, change the rules, or you want to loosen the ownership regulations, allow single companies to own even more television stations or possibly more radio stations, but you don't provide research that seems to adequately show why this is in the public interest, or that that it will create greater diversity, or you know, that it will have really things that will be effective for democracy, shall we say, versus just only help to line the pockets of the existing owners. And the FCC is trying to get out of this kind of wormhole it's gotten itself into of sort of making these updates, you know, the court giving guidance, you need to do this, you need to do this, and them sort of failing their homework for all intents and purposes. So the big day was on the 19th with the with FCC v. Prometheus in front of the Supreme Court. What was the oral arguments, right? This is oral arguments. This is the opportunity for the FCC to present its best case, as well as the opponents under Prometheus to present their best case. What were the big things that came up on that day?
Well, so the Prometheus case, and we've talked about it several times over the years that we've been together. And I think the first time I came on, that's what we actually talked about. And we've talked about it several times since. So on the 19th, what happened was that you have actually three different parties that pled a case in front of the Supreme Court. You had the FCC, You had the NAB, who was sort of on the side of the FCC.
The National Association of Broadcasters, the largest broadcast lobby in the United States.
Right. They sort of agree with the FCC, but not entirely. And it was actually two cases that were merged into one case. So that's sort of on one side. And then on the other side, you have the Prometheus group, which is the lead respondent, but represents a large and relatively diverse group of what have been known as the citizen petitioners in these cases. So the FCC goes first, and the FCC's sort of central argument is that the Third Circuit has gone beyond the authority granted to courts when they review administrative agency decisions. Unlike at the appellate level in the Third Circuit, where this case usually gets argued, it wasn't an FCC lawyer arguing it. It was the deputy solicitor general arguing on behalf of the government. And frankly, I didn't think his argument was very good. But what was notable about it is he made a relatively straightforward FCC argument that the FCC has tried to solve these problems many times, but they just can't get the Third Circuit on board, and that the agency believes that the Third Circuit has exceeded its authority here and that they would really like some form of relief. And although there have been several press reports that suggest that the justices were on board with that, that really wasn't my read at all. In fact, I thought the justices asked some really pointed questions of the FCC during the FCC's time. And they were direct and very specific. Now,
so what were some of those questions? What were they kind of?
I'm getting there. So just for the simple sake of discussion, there's really two cases when you take the Prometheus cases to the Supreme Court. There's the issues that are in the Prometheus case, and then there's the judicial practice issues, how courts are interacting with administrative agencies. There were a lot of people who thought the Supreme Court took this case on the governmental and judicial practice angle. Justice Kavanaugh, Justice Gorsuch, they are absolutely involved in questions on that front. There's a lot of movement in the legal community to move that way. But that wasn't what the questions were actually really. There was a couple of them, but there was more questions about whether or not the FCC had met the obligations on this minority ownership issue. So you have the media ownership issue, which is how the FCC is doing in reviewing the rules that were handed to them in the 1996 Telecommunications Act. And then there's a secondary issue about how those decisions are affecting the ownership of stations by women and minorities, which is a direct diversity issue. And to be fair, the FCC got asked some really pointed questions about the minority ownership issue. And I'm frankly kind of surprised about that. One of the justices that really surprised me was Justice Barrett. She asked a couple of really direct questions on this diversity issue.
Justice Barrett, the newest member of the Supreme Court.
Newest member. You know, the part of the reason that surprised me is because she hasn't been on the court long enough to get a feel on how she asks questions. But notably, Justice Thomas asked a couple questions of the FCC, which if you know anything about the Supreme Court, Justice Thomas doesn't talk very often. Justice Thomas has, to his credit, been very interested in broadcast regulation going back. And the last major broadcast regulation case that went to the Supreme Court was over broadcast indecency back in 2012. So there really hasn't been a bunch of cases that dealt with broadcasting's standards of review in the court for, you know, the better part of a decade now. So then the NAB attorney went up. Her name is Helgi Walker, and she is a very impressive attorney. Let me just say that. Although I don't subscribe to the ideas that she's presenting, she's very impressive. She was very impressive at the Third Circuit. She was very impressive.
Hi, this is Bill from Bristol, PA. You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA.
Hi, Laura Kuhn here, director of the John Cage Trust, bringing you a deep dive into the intriguing life and work of Renaissance man John Cage, celebrated composer, poet, philosopher, chess pupil of Marcel Duchamp, life partner of Merce Cunningham, macrobiotic chef, exponent of Zen, visual artist, and avid and pioneering mycologist. Tune in to All Things Cage, 7 p.m. Saturdays beginning January 2nd, for conversations with cage experts and enthusiasts from around the world, right here at Wave Farms WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, and via the web at wavefarm.org.
At last, a do-it-yourself fallout shelter from
Survive All.
A shelter that will adequately protect you and your family from the devastating effects of
nuclear fallout and falling debris.
A Survive All shelter is engineered and designed for simple assembly, takes just a weekend's time, and is civil defense approved.
Survive All basement type shelters are FHA approved. No money down, up to 5 years to pay.
Learn how easy it is to assemble a Survive All do-it-yourself fallout shelter today.
The time is now. Protect your family against atomic attack and deadly nuclear fallout. See a Survive All shelter today.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Stuart Summer of Hillsdale, New York. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXE sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXE.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC, the local hangout of the airwaves in Greene and Columbia counties.
Pauli Murray and Black Trans Rights shine at Sundance. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Who is Pauli Murray? The pioneering African-American legal scholar and organizer for racial and gender equality was celebrated this week at the annual Sundance Film Festival with the premiere of the new documentary, My Name is Pauli Murray. The film was directed by Julie Cohen and Betsy West, the duo responsible for the 2018 Oscar-nominated documentary RBG about late Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was deeply influenced by Murray.
My name is Pauli Murray, and my field of concentration has been human rights.
Murray, who died in 1985, says in the archival film clip that gave the documentary its name,
"My whole personal history has been a struggle to meet standards of excellence in a society which has been dominated by the ideas that blacks were inherently inferior to whites and women were inherently inferior to men."
Pauli Murray, born Anna Pauline Murray in 1910, orphaned in 1923 and raised by relatives, adopted the gender-neutral name Pauli in adulthood. Murray's diaries and letters, housed at Harvard University, indicate a lifelong struggle with gender identity and the discrimination too often inflicted on gender nonconforming people.
To refer to Pauli with gender-neutral pronouns, as opposed to with she, her pronouns, is an ask to acknowledge the complexity and the fullness and expansiveness of who Pauli was as a person.
That's Dolores Chandler, social worker in Durham, North Carolina, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. Chandler uses they, them as personal pronouns and does the same when referring to Pauli Murray. In a 1943 letter to their Aunt Pauline Fitzgerald Dame, Pauli Murray wrote, "I don't know whether I'm right or whether society or some medical authority is right. I only know how I feel and what makes me happy. This conflict rises up to knock me down at every apex I reach in my career. And because the laws of society do not protect me, I'm exposed to any enemy or person who may or may not want to hurt me," they wrote. Pauli's personal struggles were a forge, producing a remarkable legal strategist and activist, professor, writer, poet, and ultimately Episcopal priest. In 1940, 15 years before Rosa Parks engaged in her legendary protest, Pauli Murray and a friend sat in the whites-only section of a Virginia bus, refusing to move. Their arrest inspired Pauli to pursue civil rights law.
At Howard Law School in the early 1940s, Pauli wrote a paper making the argument that Plessy versus Ferguson should be overturned, that 1896, the notorious 1896 Supreme Court case, laying down the rule of separate but equal.
That's Director Julie Cohen speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. That legal thesis was used by Thurgood Marshall when he successfully argued Brown v. Board of Education before the Supreme Court, outlawing segregation in public schools. Pauli wrote to President Franklin Delano Roosevelt seeking support for their legal challenge to the University of North Carolina's whites-only admissions. They sent a copy to First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt, who actually responded, launching a decades-long friendship described in the book The Firebrand and the First Lady. Harvard Law School, which at the time only accepted men, also rejected Pauli Murray. Pauli wrote back, "I would gladly change my sex to meet your requirements, but since the way to such change has not been revealed to me, I have no recourse but to appeal to you to change your minds," unquote. Pauli Murray innovated legal theories and developed strategies of nonviolent social change that shaped the course of the civil rights movement. Pauli co-wrote a groundbreaking legal paper, Jane Crow and the Law, arguing that laws barring discrimination based on race equally protect women against discrimination based on sex. As an ACLU attorney, Ruth Bader Ginsburg named Pauli Murray as co-author of a seminal brief in a winning Supreme Court argument several years later.
I came to sex discrimination much later than I came to race discrimination.
That's Pauli Murray speaking at a Harvard lecture on feminism in 1966.
And having fought the battle of race discrimination, I began to see how integrally these two discriminations were. Since I could not split myself, and since I had to be a unified human being, I decided that it was not I that was wrong, but the society that was wrong.
After the death of their longtime partner, Irene Barlow, in 1973, Pauli entered the seminary, becoming the Episcopal Church's first African-American woman priest in 1977. They ministered to the sick in Washington, D.C. until their death in 1985. The Episcopal Church sainted Pauli Murray in 2012. This is the Episcopal Church's presiding bishop, Michael Curry.
Long before, almost 10 years before, Rosa Parks sat down and refused to give up her seat on that bus in Montgomery, Alabama. Pauli Murray sat down on a bus and refused to give up her seat, refusing to sit in the segregated section. She anticipated movements that would come years later. She sowed the seeds for change that would eventually happen. She's an unsung hero for the rights and the equity of women, an unsung hero for the rights and the equality and equity of all people in this country, an unsung hero for the rights of LGBTQ people in this country. She anticipated it. She saw it before it happened, and she worked for something that she would never see, but she did it so that some of us might actually see it.
In a time of turmoil, division, and epidemic violence against trans people of color, Pauli Murray stands as a remarkable example of what can be achieved through intellect, organizing, and courage. Know their name. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes?
Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu, up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, mostly cloudy with a high near 34 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 15. And on Sunday, a chance of snow showers, partly sunny with a high near 33 degrees. And Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 12 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
One speeding ticket, Columbia County.
Columbia County, everybody gets speeding tickets. How else do they pay for the roads to get plowed in the winter?
I'm Jess Spear for the Wave Farm Radio Art Archive, and I'm pleased to introduce this piece by British sound and radio artist Kef Matthews. For this piece, Matthews collaborated with the community to create programming for a radio station broadcasting from her studio in London's East End. Each contributor created a score for their piece by marking a route on a map to be performed by cyclists, with radios tuned to Radio Cycle 101.4 FM. The radio station broadcast programs continuously for a week in the summer of 2003, and we'll listen now to an excerpt from those performances.
101.4 FM. Radio Cycle. Have you heard us riding by?
But Dr. Blinov, I have a more basic question. What kind of waves do we speak about? What are these electromagnetic waves? Or what is this weird thing?
Waves, yes. As such.
Electromagnetic waves.
Electromagnetic waves. Radio waves.
Yes.
That's actually quite a peculiar thing. Because as far as I'm aware, still nobody really knows what that actually is.
Good afternoon, East London, from Radio Cycle on 101.4 FM.
So we have these weird things called electromagnetic waves or radio waves, and we can use them and we can make a radio program right now, which functions by using those waves, where we have a transmitter and hopefully somebody out there, hello, has a receiver.
Radio Cycle 101.4 FM. Phone number 0207-923-9697.
I can actually hear us speak here, but we still don't know how it really works down on the kind of...
Theoretical level. True, that's certainly true, that's certainly true.
Here in studio right now we have great guests.
You can't deny me, you can decide to turn your face away.
So, I guess first I'm...
I come from London and the rest too.
Oh, something inside so strong. Brothers and sisters, when they insist we're just not good enough. Well, we know better, just look them in the eyes and say, we're gonna do it anyway, we're gonna do it anyway, we're gonna do it anyway, we're gonna do it anyway.
It made me have a lot of emotions, and you see, so I like singing, so I thought I could do it on the radio.
Now I finally realize, can't you see, that's the way I feel about you, baby.
Thank you.
Did you ever see a cow with a green eye down by the bay?
Okay, double trouble.
What?
And it's also £5.
No, they're different type. And I've got the Chaos Race. They're like evil gods, whatever. They all they want to do is cause destruction and chaos all over the world. They look extremely good, with like large axes, black armor, shining. Basically, you can't see anything but armor and weapons.
So, but then they also thought that the radio waves they propagate through the ether. But then they found out that there is no such thing as the ether, and the radio waves also propagate in the vacuum.
By the time the small, stiff body of the boy was finally discovered and laid on a hurdle in the snow-covered rushes, it was already deep twilight. The boys stood round, frightened, like shy birds, staring at the corpse and rubbing their stiff blue fingers.
True, and they discovered that light also propagates through the vacuum, which is also quite a contradictory thing, because still nobody knows whether light is a wave or a particle, which is quite a bizarre thing. So, for a few hundred years, the idea of ether was really quite suspended.
Alright, okay. Big up the furious crew inside.
All right. I spit quick flow, six flows. Can't hear me behind you on my tiptoes. Chaps and chain and phone, I'll take those. Take out you or the crew, who knows? And again, and I spit quick flow, six flows. Can't hear me behind you on my tiptoes. Chaps and chain and phone, I'll take those. Take out you or the crew, who knows?
It's all about.
Alright. Okay, let me. Alright. Mixer. Alright. Ruby. Alright. Ruby, don't run up your tongue. Me and you clash, yes, you won't get bun. Lewis don't get spat, they get flung. All over cause that fat lady song. Say what? Do you want me to stop?
But, I find it interesting and hard to understand. I mean, Dr. Blinov, if we have a point A and a point B, and between those points we have a wave, an electromagnetic wave. Does that wave actually travel?
It actually does.
It does travel.
It does travel.
I thought in a way the points are connected anyhow.
You see, basically the idea of wave presumes that there is some substance which basically exists between point A and point B. And the wave is a pressure front which actually propagates in it. Yes. Just like in the sea or like in the ocean, you've got to have water to have an ocean. If you've got the water, you have a very possibility to have a wave in it, which would be some kind of a front, which would be somehow different from the rest of it.
So have you applied like water understanding towards air understanding?
Yes, that would be quite rightly, yes.
So here we have the map. Right, and the map that we have. We hear you in the house. We've got you in the house. Okay, that's fine. We'll be departing then at 2:40. We can delay everything here for 7 minutes. Because it's getting warm again suddenly. Okay, fine. Radio Cycle in the house, delaying the first departure until 2:40. Okay, here comes the information for the first piece. The route from London Field Cyclists is to go out of Pub in the Park and you take a left down London Lane and you come across Exmouth Place, across Warburton Place, Tudor Road, and then you come down past Kendall House. And the road bends slightly round to the right, the bendy bit, and you're on the end of King Edward's Road. You bend round Skipworth, and then you come down into the Victoria Park. And you cycle round and round and round the park. The instruction was please that as many cyclists do this together as possible. If you're wondering what's going on, then call 0207-923-9697. You're tuned into Radio Cycle on 101.4 FM. Mario Radinovich's work for as many cyclists as possible to take a circuitous route around Victoria Park.
wave is simple. That's a wave in the pressure of the air, isn't
yes.
it?
The yes.
change in the pressure of the air.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
One. Outside the computer room crew. Yes, all in one. Outside the intro, outside the Roman crew. Outside the Ranwell block. Outside the pit block crew. Yeah, it's all in. Stubble, lock off man on deck. Blunt, inside. Okay, I'm in the vets right now. And you guys be trying to test right now. You're close to get the vets right now. Big test under the vets right now. This is never coming back next right now. It's time for a big test right now. So don't bother getting vets right now. AK standard, AK standard.
Thank you, Victoria Willis. The next thing you're going to hear is an important announcement from President Nixon concerning national security.
I am not one of homosexuality, I understand. But nevertheless, the point that I make is that, goddamn, I do not think that you glorify on public television homosexuality. The reason you don't glorify it, John, any more than you glorify whores. Now, we all know people go to whores. We all know that people are do that. We all have weaknesses and so forth and so on. But goddammit, what do you think that does to kids?
But I did prepare.
Cycle 101.4 FM. Hold on, folks. We're being bled into by some pirate who's done us a dirty. I met him just last summer, and it was a completely chance meeting, so I just want to say welcome, Bobby.
Tonight, for all brothers and sisters in the house, Radio Cycle, Bobby FM, coming live for you, and you, and you, and you, for I, and I, and I, and I.
How unworthy to receive glory, honor, and power.
In studio, both are writers and...
I'm really worried about consumerism because that means basically we have no human exchange. It's a machine logic. It's all about money, it's about numbers, and so...
But it's also the example of what we call commodity fetishism, you know. The commodity presents itself without any connection to where it comes from. So you look at something and you buy it and you don't think about all those connections that came behind this phone was made here by these people, and it's our society naturally does that. So in that sense, you know, you don't know whether the coffee you buy has been done by some good cooperative somewhere or it's been done by some cockroach capitalist slaving his workers. So in that sense, maybe that is a problem in our society, that we don't feel happy in our own consumerism because we don't know where it comes from.
So you lift up into the air. At first you feel this kind of tingling in your whole body.
What we're really interested in is making a history film about the present, about right now. There is no matter day, no matter
day, no matter day. We have here with us Shireen and Yasmin from Haggerston School. They have travelled all the way to come and talk to us about rap music and do they think it influenced the youth of today. Are you ready, you two?
Yeah.
Okay. What type of music do you two listen to?
Well, I like R&B, garage, soul, hip-hop and a bit of rock.
We quite like this idea of finding information from different places and bringing it together. And it's a series we did. This one's called A Cup of Tea. You brought a tea bag to the show and the sound source was the kettle boiling. You listened to it in the front room of this house, which had been stripped of everything and the walls had been lined with speakers. About 200 or 300 domestic speakers taken out of things like TVs, radios.
Introduce yourself.
Thank you. Yes, hello, good morning. I'm a visual artist, as Kafer said, and I also have been keeping diaries. The image of melting toffee comes to mind and breaking into pieces. I looked at the broken pieces on the ground, thinking I like these.
London, and here in studio we have Caroline. Hi. And we have, do you want to tell me?
It's a song that was written by Mikey and myself the week after the big anti-war protest in Hyde Park.
Did you see 2 million feet marching down the street that Saturday? Were you there and did you hear Jesse Jackson speak?